It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday, September 21st, 2021, and I have one question for you nerdy people. Do you remember the 21st of September? Welcome to episode 199 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I'm Maction, and I have my fellow nerd and connoisseur of comedy, not only the first option, but the best option. You know him, you love him, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. Mr. Nice Guy, how you doing, man?
Dude, I've been good. Now, it's been a long time since we've gotten to do the pod, just because there's been a lot of stuff going on, right? But life is good, man. I got so much to update you on if you got a couple minutes to indulge me.
I do, and I've got some minutes if you'll indulge me right back. But tell me about it. What's up, man?
Dude, so first of all, I got to cross an item off my bucket list. Dave Chappelle was in Milwaukee 2 weeks ago, and my brother was in town. And actually, I should back up. I knew Dave Chappelle was coming, so I reached out to my brother and said, dude, you need to come out here. Hang out with us for a week and a half, 2 weeks. And one of the things we'll do is go see Dave Chappelle, right? So we did, and it was a great show. It was probably the best stand-up show that I've ever been to in my life. And Dave Chappelle is the reason I started doing comedy, his show. So that was great. Donnell Rawlings, the guy who used to play Ashy Larry on Chappelle's show, was there. So that was phenomenal. And then this past weekend, a buddy messaged me on Facebook, and he said, hey, man, I got tickets to go see Tom Segura, but I can't go. Do you want the tickets? And this is like 45 minutes before the show. And I was like, oh, I don't know, man.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. But I was like, you know what? I live 25 minutes from Milwaukee. I'm going to go for it. So I said, yeah, message me the ticket. He said, you can have it for free. I Venmo'd him a few dollars just because that's how I am, right? Went to go see Tom Segura last minute on the cheap, and it was a great show as well. The third awesome thing, Mac, that I'll share with you before we continue is my booking agent reached out to me. I think I'm hot on the mic. Let me turn this down a little bit. He reached out to me maybe 2.5 weeks ago. In fact, I think it might have been the week I went to go see Chappelle. And he said, hey, do you have anything going on tonight? Kevin Farley, who is Chris Farley's brother, is in Illinois and he needs an opener. And I was like, dude, I can absolutely make that happen. So drove to Illinois, got to open for him. Outdoor venue, pretty packed, had a really good time. So, Mac, that's what I wanted to update you on. Great weeks.
Dude, that's fantastic. Okay, so I'll see what I can do. For those of you who are watching episode 199 live on Twitch, twitch.tv/two nerds in a pod, you will notice that it's just Mr. Nice Guy's video at the moment, and that's because I've moved across the country. I'm now on the Pacific Coast. But the internet situation's been a little, well, I mean, we've been getting things sorted. That's why it's been a few weeks since we've recorded. It's all my fault. Hopefully this Wi-Fi hotspot that I'm using to keep me connected is going to hold out for the show. So fingers crossed, everybody. So if anything goes wrong, we blame it on that, just to be clear. But the cool stuff that's been going on, we went to Denver and then we went on to the Great Basin Astronomy Festival.
Nice.
in Great Basin National Park. We got to volunteer and hung out there for that. I met some really cool people from Vegas who, you know, had like the coolest telescopes. It was awesome. And it was just terrific. And then we kept on moving. We got out here. We started to get settled. It's gorgeous. And we're in a pretty nice place. And so far, the people seem to be pretty darn nice, too. Mrs. the Mac hopped right into work, and I'm taking some time to relax and get things squared away. So it's just kind of a dream come true in a lot of ways.
Nice.
That's what I've been up to.
Dude, that's awesome, man. And we're excited to be back. Excited? Next week, you should probably be all set up, right? And then the people can see your beautiful face, right? You'll be set up with internet, right? Solid internet, hopefully. Yeah?
Yep. Next Tuesday, by the latest, at least that's what they tell me, I should have an internet connection with enough bandwidth that I can, you know, like stream the face, that you'll be able to see me. And, you know, well, yeah. In the meantime, we'll just make this work.
It'll work. And it's working now. And it's working because this is episode number 199 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Mac, we're at episode 200 next week. This is crazy. This is crazy. It's exciting. Well, let's jump right into the gaming news. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in before and after the fact. Now, Mac, it's been several weeks since we got to do the show, but there's some old news that we got to catch up on because I think it's stuff that you will want to discuss. The first one is there was a PlayStation showcase a couple weeks ago. And there was some news that came out of that showcase that I think will excite you, Mac, that might even make you want to buy a PlayStation 5. This is on the blog, PlayStation.com. A pinnacle of Star Wars Legends storytelling, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, is set over 4,000 years before the events of the original trilogy and introduced a new story of new heroes and villains in an epic struggle for the fate of the galaxy. The team here at and Sony Interactive Entertainment have joined forces within Lucasfilm Games to bring you a remake of the classic Star Wars adventure. We're rebuilding one of the greatest RPGs of all time for a new generation with modern tech, features, visuals, and more, while maintaining the integrity of the story and characters that we've come to cherish. So, Mac, it's going to be a console exclusive at launch. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. How do you feel, man? That's a game that you played a lot, right?
Dude, I am excited. Yeah, it's a fantastic game. It's one that I love. I am so glad because Knights of the Old Republic, really good. The first one especially had a fantastic, fantastic storyline. It was hindered a little bit by the, by the technical constraints of the time. So
sure.
If anything deserves a remake, that certainly does. I am a little sad that it's going to be a PS5 exclusive on launch because I really, really like it and would like to play the remake. But I don't know if I'll get a PS5 just for this one.
No, of course not.
But I certainly am glad that they're remaking it.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Some games I feel like they don't really need new life breathed into them. This is one that I think does, and I missed it the first time around. I've heard so many stories about it and how great it was, so I'm excited at some point to try it out. So that's pretty cool. There was a lot of other really cool PlayStation news that came out of that conference. New God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn 2 release date, Frozen, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the game, but anyway, lots of cool news that came out of that. So for those of you who are excited about KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic, you think, man, I don't have a PlayStation 5. How am I ever going to get to play it? Because it's so hard to find. You may be in luck, and that's what this next news story is about. GameSpot.com. If you've been following the news of PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S, by the way, this is by Alex Newhouse, you know that the consoles are extremely difficult to find in stock. While retailers have been selling a handful of consoles online per week, they've been even rarer at physical stores. Skipping down, it says, according to reporting from TechRadar, Best Buy will have stock of the Xbox Series X and the disc drive version of the PS5 in stores Thursday, September 23rd, which will be the first time in over a month. If the retailer lets customers actually purchase a PS5 or Xbox Series X in person, as opposed to doing it online, it would be one of the first instances of a major chain selling them in stores since last year. So, Mac, the question I have for you is, how many people do you think are going to get arrested Thursday morning for doing crazy stuff trying to get these Xboxes and PlayStation?
I have long since learned not to take bets either way on how ridiculous people can be. I'm not putting money down.
I feel like it's extremely risky to try to get one of these things in person. And not to be like corny or cheesy, but I mean, we've seen what happens on Black Friday, right? When it used to be just in person. People get wild, people buy stuff, and then they get it stolen. So Now, Mac, is the PC still, is it still like sufficient for you? Or with all of this awesome gaming news that we've been hearing, are you starting to get an itch? You know, Nintendo Switch, right? We got Metroid coming out next month. We got KOTOR coming out on PlayStation. We got all kinds of stuff, man. Like, you used to be a console guy. What do we got to do to get you back then?
At the expense of, you know, sounding like a broken record, what we've got to get me back there is we've got to have the companies that are in charge of the consoles, you know, treat their customers right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way about all three of them, though, or just Nintendo?
No, I feel that way about all three of them, which is why I'm sticking with just PC. I mean, you know, Microsoft is not... You know, I mean, nobody escapes my ire when it comes to them needing to treat the customer better.
So let me ask you this. If someone, and I'm not suggesting that I would do this, but if you walked out of your house one day and there was a package on your doorstep and it was console A, B, or C, right? PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo Switch. And they said, hey, I bought you this console. You just got to buy the games. How would you handle that situation? Because I know the thing for you is not putting money in those companies' pockets, right?
Exactly. Is I would send that kind person a thank you note. If they were close enough to hug, I would hug them. And then I would proceed to try and buy secondhand the games that I wanted for that console to make sure that money didn't go into the pocket of them. Now, and for some of the people, you know, for some of the console makers, it would be harder to abstract myself from putting money in their pockets just because, well, I mean, payments that you have to do online for the services, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Because, yeah, a lot of the games, they say, hey, you got to play them online, so you got to have our... I was just curious. Well, let's talk a little bit more about VR. This is on TheVerge.com. Now, Mac, I know you're not a fan of Apple. I'm not going to be sarcastic and say that you are, but they did just have a big event. They announced new iPhones, new iPads. They didn't say anything about the rumored VR headset, but there's plenty of info out there about it. I was reading, Mac, that this rumored Apple headset is going to cost $3,000, so it's very, very high end. And on TheVerge.com, there's more rumored info written by Mitchell Clark. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically it implies that you're going to have to use an iPhone for processing in order for this to work. Now, is this an absurd move in your estimation, or do you think this is just typical Apple saying, hey, if you want to use one of our things, you got to have this other thing that costs $1,000?
I'm inclined to say typical Apple, but because, yeah, you're right. I'm no real fan. But this is just a rumor at this point?
It's a rumor, and you know, at first it made me roll my eyes, but then I thought about the Valve Index, right? Or even the Oculus Quest. Like, in order to use the Valve Index, you don't have to have a PC built by Valve, but you do have to have a pretty beefy PC. In order to use the Oculus Quest, but you have to have a Facebook account. So I think, you know, these kind of contingencies aren't uncommon. It's just that with Apple's, you're forced to have to buy something that's in their ecosystem in order for this already expensive thing to work.
It is just a rumor, but like that would make me want to, you know, avoid it just that much more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you've experienced VR. So like having experienced it, is it something that you're into?
Oh, no, I 100% believe in the future of VR. I've played a few different titles and I've enjoyed them all. Bridge Crew was fantastic. Let's see. Beat Saber, Pistol Whipped was very, very fun. And I have not played any Half-Life, Alex. I made a promise, at least to myself, that I was going to save Half-Life, Alex, until I got to play it with you at your place.
Oh, dude, I didn't know that. Well, that makes it even all the more exciting. So that's dope. Now, one thing, and we'll just end on this. We'll get out of the news because I want to hear what you have in gaming history. But one thing I forgot to share with you, gaming related, but also comedy related. Over the past couple weeks, someone said I need a longer cord for my headset. I sure do. Over the past couple weeks, I got to do two shows in virtual reality online. And I don't know if I told you that. It was such a cool experience. There's literally this app called AltSpace VR, and if you don't have it, you should check it out. Mm-hmm. And it's focused on making events more accessible, making them accessible online. So there's like concerts, there's comedy shows, There's just people hanging out watching wrestling. It's dope. So a couple people have built comedy clubs in this program, and I put on my VR headset. I built an avatar. There was like 50 people in there ready to hear comedy, and I went in and I did a set a couple nights last week, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever experienced. So, you know, when we think about Ready Player One, I don't think we're that far away. Like, obviously, graphically and as far as the level of immersiveness, we are, but people are really coming up with cool ideas and implementing these headsets in unique ways, and I'm excited to see what's next. That has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now we turn from the Ready Player One future, and we look back into the past with some video game history. Just a couple of cool things that came out this week in years before. In 2008, released for the Wii, we saw Mega Man 9. Love that game. Obviously, Mega Man 8 had been released, you know, years before. Mega Man 9 was returned to the classic style that hadn't been since the release of Mega Man 6 back in, I believe that was in 1995. It was right there at the very end of the NES's lifespan. As a matter of fact, I believe for Mega Man 5, I believe that they were already releasing titles and had been for a bit for the Super Nintendo by the time that they released Mega Man 6. I'm getting distracted here. 2005, for the original Xbox, we saw the release of Ninja Gaiden Black. This is actually my preferred of the Ninja Gaidens.
Yeah.
Because it had the easy mode. Yeah.
Cheater.
I mean, is it a cheat if they programmed it into the game?
Fair point.
But Ninja Gaiden for the original Xbox becomes so much better when you can play it on a tolerable easy mode. We'll leave each to their own. In 1994, released for the PC, is a game called Master of Magic. This is one of those games that's a fantastic 4X, you know, expand, exploit, explore, you know, all that jazz. Yeah, Galvatron got it right. Ninja Dog Mode was the name of the mode for Ninja Gaiden. But yeah, Master of Magic, I have sunk so many hours into that game. Now, I offer these because if these are any games that you've not heard of and you thought, maybe I'd pass on them, don't. Those are well worth it. But what I want to focus on very briefly for video game history is a little something that happened in September 15th, actually, in 1994. I know it's been, this would have been last episode, but there was an interesting thing that happened. Did you know, Mr. Nice Guy, that on the 15th in 94, that Nintendo seized and destroyed copies of Game Boy video games?
I did not know that. I knew that E.T. was once seized and destroyed, but I did not know that about Game Boy.
This one, so it would have been in the Netherlands. Apparently there was some sort of an issue, big or otherwise, with, shall we say, bootlegged, I guess? But, you know, like copies that people had made of video games, of Game Boy games. Nintendo's Netherlands branch seized a whole bunch of them, and then they got a dude to dress up in a, you know, in a Mario mascot type suit, you know, with one of those big foam heads and everything, and drive a steamroller over them.
What?
Absolutely wild.
That sounds absurd to me.
Right?
So I remember I once read a story about some police officers who destroyed fireworks by putting them into a car. And there's a video of this, like putting them into a van and then they like exploded. And I don't know if they were trying to destroy them at that point or if they were going to destroy them later. But like, to me, this is almost a similar thing. Like, there's a lot easier ways to destroy stuff than going that far. Am I wrong in that assessment?
No, I think you're 100% right. It was obviously, and the fact that what we have is we have like news articles of it after the fact of it happening. It's certainly a PR stunt. I mean, why else would you dress somebody up like Mario and have him operate the steamroller? Last time I checked, that's not canonically accurate to the Mario games.
He never did that. He would have just flushed him down the toilet. You're exactly right.
Exactly. He's a plumber, not a road crew dude. But nonetheless, an interesting bit of history. I encourage you to go give it a look. I don't think you'd get away with that in the United States. But apparently in the Netherlands, bootleg games are destined for the steamroller. A little bit of weirdness for video game history today, but, you know, hey, sometimes you need a little bit, and that's history for you.
Cool. Well, let's keep things moving. I'm not going to lie. We haven't done the show in a few weeks. I totally forgot that we're supposed to do Topic of the Week right now, but luckily, there was something that I had in my back pocket that we can talk about for today, and right now, it's that time. It's time for Topic of the Week. Shout out to Ralph for the Tier 1 sub. Shout out to Maction for subscribing earlier, and shout out to Alex Man for gifting multiple subs in tonight's stream. Y'all are the best viewers on Twitch. Let's talk Activision, and like, I sincerely need your guidance on this because I don't understand it. This is on TechCrunch.com, and it's written by Taylor Hatmaker. The consequences are mounting for gaming giant Activision Blizzard after the company became the subject of a landmark state investigation into discriminatory workplace practices and sexual harassment this summer. Now Activision Blizzard confirms that it is the subject of a federal investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which has been ramping up enforcement efforts against tech companies in recent months. The Wall Street Journal reported Monday that the SEC had subpoenaed Activision Blizzard and a number of the company's key executives, including CEO Bobby Kotick. Activision Blizzard confirmed the SEC investigation Tuesday in a statement to investors, noting that it, quote, continues to productively engage with regulators, unquote, including the SEC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the National Labor Relations Board, and the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing. We're not going to read the whole thing, but obviously subpoenas are no joke. Mac, my understanding of the SEC is that they regulate, like, trading, stocks, equities, right? I'm confused as to why the SEC is doing an investigation based on sexual harassment. Do you have any, like, legal hypothesis on why this is happening?
In general, you're right. You know, it got started after the stock market crash in the 30s to try and prevent stuff like that happening. So mostly manipulation and the like.
Right, right.
I have not read too much into why the SEC is involved. So it would just be speculation. But it could be that they're looking at it from a sort of, like, that there weren't people skimming money from something. I mean, but that's all I can think of. But then again, I mean, I don't know too terribly much about the SEC.
Maybe in some ways the effect that type of behavior could have on the stock price plays a role into what the SEC does. But beyond that, I just...
Galvatron says the SEC is looking into whether Activision Blizzard covered up their knowledge of investigations of their corporate culture, which they should have disclosed to investors during investor calls. That's kind of the only thing that occurred to me. It sounds like Galvatron's read up on some of it in a way that I haven't.
No, you're good. And it, one of the things that came out in this story is that they just lost their chief legal officer as well. You can never assume guilt, right? I really don't like to go down that rabbit hole. I'm a big believer in due process, right? Everyone gets a fair trial. Even people who have done deplorable things, right? Like, that's part of what we believe here in America, is that even people that have done ridiculous stuff need to stand trial and need to be sentenced, and they have a right to representation. And so whenever I see that a legal person leaves an organization or leaves a trial, it kind of raises an eyebrow to me. You know, it just makes me think, these people are guilty. I'm not going to lie. I just kind of think, well, you know, this person probably has a conscience and doesn't want to be a part of this. I don't know.
Yeah, it could very well be. I mean, but at the end of the day, all we've got is speculation until we get to the end of whatever processes they're doing to try and figure out what's what.
That has been our topic of the week, Mac. Back to you.
All right. Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart, and you know how it's played. We'll post the link in the chat for those of you who are here with us live. We'll talk about some of the virtues and potentially some of the vices. And at the end, we'll say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here or whether it deserves to be kickstarted. And this is a game called Time Melters. So, what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a game that's in the sort of, you know, third person, the very classic epic fantasy third person style that we've seen in games like any of the Elder Scrolls and the like. They're looking at a total of $23,000, this company out of Canada, to get this game rocking and rolling. If you want a copy of it, if you like what they've got to offer, your minimum buy-in is $16 US or $20 Canadian. And yeah, it seems like a sort of fantasy game. It's got this whole witchcraft and burning and type of witch trials thing going on it. But here's where it gets interesting. The character in this game has one hit point. So you can just take one hit and then you die. But you are kind of I wouldn't say master of time, but you have magic at your disposal, and time magic is one of the things that that you work with. So you basically blip back in time and you have your copies moving forward and acting either in concert with you for your sort of second time around, second go at, I don't know, a monster or a puzzle or whatever. Or maybe you use that time person to, like, be a distraction while you sneak around in order to do stuff. It's very, very interesting. And while I've seen this concept before in a couple of, like, side-scrolling 2D games, I want to say this is one of the first times I've... This might be the first time I've ever seen it implemented, at least to this extent, inside of, of a 3D game. Now, there is also supposed to be co-op available. So you can play through either solo or you can play it co-op. It's supposed to feature a full 2-player campaign, playable online. I don't believe I saw anything about whether or not couch co-op would be available, but online co-op is definitely being pointed out there. And yeah, Mr. Nice Guy, what are you thinking? What?
I have to roll my eyes a little bit. I mean, the idea of one hit and you die, to me, is silly. Like, I remember playing Commander Keen as a kid, and I really liked that game. I don't know if you've ever played it, Mac.
I love Commander Keen. I have conquered the dope fish.
I liked it, too, but just the idea of one hit and you die is silly to me. And then the idea of one hit and you die co-op is even dumber. Like, I don't understand. Because it's like your buddy dies, and then you're obligated to die too if you want to keep playing with him. You know what I mean?
You know, I don't necessarily agree, because I think there is something fun and challenging about having to, you know, only having one hit point. At the same time, a game that's built from the ground up with the idea that you have one hit point instead of being a bullet sponge is going to wind up playing different, you know? I think especially if you go into something with that idea in mind, you're going to have, you know, the game is just going to be better for the play style, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, so there's something about that type of challenge that appeals to me, right? Like, one of my favorite modes in Call of Duty used to be Search and Destroy, because if you die, you're dead until the next round starts, right? Like, there's a certain level of permanence.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am not necessarily a fan of roguelites, right? Like, games where you die and you lose everything and you got to go all the way back. I feel like it's the gaming industry's way of trying to bring back NES-level challenges. Of, like, there was no save, there was no, you know, start over. When it was game over, it was game over. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like they're going about replicating it in the wrong way, so I'm just not a fan of this concept. That's just me. That's me.
Oh, man, I disagree. I think that having the one hit point really makes it feel less like you are, you know, like a god tier type of hero, and more like you're powerful, but you are very mortal. And then combining it with this time looping stuff where you wind up, you know, where your previous life, if you will, keeps on going and you can make the different choices. I've always kind of enjoyed the concept of that sort of thing, and maybe it goes all the way back to me watching Groundhog Day, but I just, it appeals to me, the idea of, you know, working with time, really appeals, and I love the concept.
Yeah, Spinnis compares it to Contra, which, like, proves my point. Like, it's an NES level thing. Like, one hit and you die and you have a certain number of lives, and that's fine, but I just don't like it the way they've implemented it in modern games. But I get it. Mac, what do you think about this one overall?
Well, overall, I like it. The price point's good. I mean, this is the first time that these guys have, tried to kickstart something, and it looks like they're first. Release date is supposed to be, you know, late quarter one, early quarter two of 2022. So not that far away for a Kickstarter. Yeah. And they're pretty close to their goal. I like the concept. I like the look. And I would absolutely love to give it a go. However,
uh-oh,
there's no playable demo.
No!
Yeah, for something that's supposedly so close to being done, so ready for prime time, there's nothing for us to actually try. And it is entirely possible that, I'm pretty sure that it's not, because I looked through for a demo. I'm like, well, if it's this close, there's got to be something. On their frequently asked questions, they do say that the alpha will be available soon after the campaign ends. And that's the only mention that I can see about any sort of, you know, any sort of playable thing, is that the alpha should come out, like, I don't know, soon, whatever that means, but weeks, hopefully, after the campaign ends. And if it's that close to have an alpha, you would just think, you know, you would think even more so that that means that there would be something to try. I'm not upset. I'm just disappointed.
I understand. I totally get it. That's your one thing. That's your non-negotiable. I get it.
Yeah. And for that, I have to say Kick. I love the concept. I love the idea. I want to see more games like this. Let me be clear. I want to see this game. Show me this game. Let me try it. But it'll have to be a Kick from me. I hope this gets funded. I hope it goes all the way, but I'll have to just buy it at full price when it launches.
Yeah, and I Kick it as well, for the reasons I already said. I don't want to be redundant.
Good luck to you guys, Auto Exec Games. We hope that all your dreams come true, but next time, come with a demo, please.
Well, that has been Kick or Kickstart. Now it's time for one of my favorite segments of the show, Nerd Flex.
Woo-hoo. This is a sound test episode today, my friend.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so every fourth episode since episode 131, we've featured a sound test. So 131, 135, you know, and so on. And of those sound tests, only episode 147, 151, 159, and 167 have been claimed. So with this one that I'm about to play now, that means that there will be 14 unclaimed sound tests. So get on those, guys. Get your prizes. But first, listen carefully. All right, so if you could identify that, let us know. Tweet at @2nerdsinapod with the hashtag sound test and identify this episode, episode 199. Good luck. You'll need it.
Well, now it's time for Nerdflex. I guess it already is, right? The segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host, and sometimes you do. So come with those gaming-related multiple-choice questions in the chat right now. Mac and I will work to answer them. We don't get phone-a-friend. We don't get lifelines. It's just us and our brains, no Google, trying to figure these things out. We immediately have a question from our good friend AlexMan47. Check him out on YouTube. In Metroid games, the Metroid creature is only weak to which elemental beam? This is a good question. A, plasma beam. B, wave beam. C, spazzer beam. Or D, ice beam. Mac, this is a good one.
It is a good one, and I think I know the answer.
What do you think it is?
Now, I will take some bit of an issue with the weakness, because I'm going off of having played Metroid Fusion, as well as the original Metroid, and what you did was you could freeze the Metroid with the ice beam, but then you had to finish it off with missiles, so I don't know as I would necessarily characterize that as weakness, but of those beams, I think only the ice beam had any effectiveness, at least in the first game.
Now, Mac, I gotta keep bugging you about not wanting to get into the console game. We're getting a new 2D Metroid game on October 8th, the first one in 19 years that is not a remake, and it takes place after the events of Metroid Fusion. I'm just planting that bug in your ear. But well, I think that you're right. I think it's D, ice beam. Should we make that our final answer? Should we lock that in?
Let's make that our final answer, yeah.
D, ice beam, final answer. Let's lock it in. Alex Mann, let us know in the chat.
So Alex Mann says D is the correct answer. Ice beam. Metroids have a weakness of cold ice beams, but only freezes them. Then they have to be killed with 5 missiles. Wave beam doesn't hurt them. Though Metroid Prime did allow all beams to hurt Metroids. Hey, that's interesting. Didn't know that.
Yeah, now, Mac, we got 2 more questions in the chat. Do we want to skip the test bank one and do these 2 questions in the chat?
Yeah, let's go ahead and err on the side of the questions we're getting live and save those test bank ones for later.
Cool. Why don't you read one of those for us?
We'll go with Galvatron's. Which of these arcade brawlers never got a home console release? Was it the Simpsons arcade game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game, Golden Axe, Double Dragon, Aliens vs. Predator, X-Men arcade game, or Captain Commando?
Galvatron comes with, like, here's a question and here's 6 options. He's like that teacher you hated in college. I can cross a couple of these off the list immediately. What does he mean by home consoles? Like arcade one up? Because technically you could say any of these is a home console release because you could put it in your home, right? You could buy it, put it in your home.
No, I think he means home console, like Super Nintendo, Genesis, you know.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, now I understand. I'm dumb. So anyway, Simpsons, I know, was available on Xbox. And I also know Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. X-Men arcade game, absolutely, because I have it.
Yeah, Double Dragon had an NES release.
Yep. I don't know about... I know there's versions of Captain Commando on console, but I don't know if the arcade one is. And I don't know about Alien vs. Predator.
I'm inclined to think that Alien vs. Predator, because Captain Commando... Actually, you know, I don't know. You know, I can't choose between those two, Mr. Nice Guy.
Let's go with... Let's go with Captain Commando.
All right, Captain Commando, final answer. Galvatron, let us know the answer.
Dang it, it was Alien vs. Predator. We got it wrong. So, that's okay.
Maybe next time we'll get it.
Well, let's keep things moving, Mac. Which Zelda game doesn't start with Link sleeping at the start? Link's Awakening, Oracle of Ages, Phantom Hourglass, or the Minish Cap? Well, we can immediately cross Link's Awakening off that list, because I know he's sleeping at the beginning of that. I lean towards Minish Cap, but I don't know.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't remember Phantom Hourglass or Minish Cap very well, but I'm pretty sure Oracle of Ages, Link is sleeping at the start. So I'm inclined to say Minish Cap personally.
Do we want to go with Minish Cap, or what do you think?
I'm leaning toward Minish Cap, but I would yield to your expertise. You are more you've done more of the Zelda games than I have.
Yeah, let's go with Minish Cap. That's what I lean toward.
Okay.
Final answer, Minish Cap.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is my fault, dude. The correct answer is B, Oracle of Ages. Link is transported by the Triforce when he walks into the Temple of the Triforce. Link's Awakening, he's in the bed. Phantom Hourglass is started sleeping on the pirate ship, and Minish Cap is sleeping on his bed as well. Dude.
Great questions.
Yeah, good question. It's a shame neither of us paid attention at the most important first moments of the video game. We've got to relinquish our nerd card. Well, no, we don't. We got one, so it's no clean sweep. We retain our nerd card today.
We got one out of three. Well, that's been Nerdflex.
Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I am not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. And this is a little bit of an update. Mr. Nice Guy, we've come to a resolution of sorts on Epic v. Apple. Did you hear?
I did not hear, and I'm excited to hear about it.
Well, I won't attempt a full breakdown of the case in the 7 or so minutes of legalese here, but I will refer our listeners to episodes 136, 152, 153, 156, 178, 181, and 187, and technically also 188, but that was only tangentially, wherein we've discussed things about this. So if you, though, dear listener, has heard something about the Epic v. Apple decision, you've probably heard incorrectly, because... Well, it's not the longest, court opinion I've ever heard. It is long. It's 185 pages, but you didn't actually have to read all 185 to find out who the winner was, so I just don't know why everybody kept reporting it so incorrectly.
Go figure.
But let's set the record straight. Apple won 9 out of 10 counts, and it lost 1 out of 10 counts. But it's important to note that not even that 1 of 10 was a real loss for Apple. In spite of everybody reporting it wrong, Apple won. They did not lose. So the big issue that Epic hung their hat on for this whole thing was that Apple is a monopoly. And the court found that Apple is not a monopoly over the market.
Yep.
And this is more or less the crux of counts 1 through 9. They analyzed a whole bunch of different laws and theories rooted in the Sherman Antitrust Act and in California's unfair competition law. Now, some of this... we don't have the time to get into the weeds to that because there's so much more. I'm going to press forward. Maybe sometime I'll circle back and talk more about how Apple is not a monopoly, and how Epic argued that they were, and how Apple argued that they weren't, and then the judge said both of you are wrong, like the way that you guys are defining stuff is wrong, but Apple's not a monopoly because the truth is like in the middle of what the two of you are saying, and Apple still isn't a monopoly, even if we meet in the middle. anyway, they won 9 out of 10. The court does not consider them to be a monopoly. Also, in another big win for Apple, the court affirmed that they had every right to kick not just Fortnite, but also Epic entirely to the curb for their violation of contract, which, as the court noted, had not changed materially since 2010. Apple's contract that Epic signed, that they said they would abide by, that they broke, and there was some question as to whether or not that would be okay, because there was temporary relief, injunctive relief granted, when Apple was just like, okay, Epic, your account's, you know, terminated. There's going to be no, what's the game engine that Epic is responsible for, Mr. Nice Guy?
Is it Unreal?
Yeah, I think it's Unreal. But yeah, they had kicked them entirely, so there would be no Unreal Engine support. And the judge, had actually, delivered an injunction and said, hey, Apple, you can't kick them off just yet. We're going to wait until we find at the end. So there were some of us who were just like, oh, what's going to happen with that hanging question? But the question was just, let's not be too hasty. And then at the end, they're like, yeah, Apple, you were well within their rights to kick them off. You can keep them kicked off if you want. There's more to unpack there, but we don't have time for that. So let's get to that complicated one, right? I said they won 9 out of 10. That's pretty straightforward, but they lost 1 out of 10. So the court did find that it was a violation of California state law, and only California state law, for them to prevent steering to websites out of the app for purchases. This was something that was written into their contracts, said you couldn't induce people to go to other places to buy things. And while that might initially seem like a win, and this is again why I'm like, how did you guys get this so wrong, reporters? The judge really kind of gives it back to Apple and asserted that the contract with Apple does mean that, and we'll just use the Epic, the Fortnite situation, means that the V-Bucks purchased on Epic's site and used in the iOS platform are still subject to that same 30% cut. Just because you don't use the in-app processing on Apple's side because you direct them out of the app to your website to buy the V-Bucks doesn't let you off the hook for your contractual cut to Apple. So when you read headlines last week like, Epic makes a dent in Apple's revenue, and some places have kind of walked that back since, they were all basically dead wrong. The only thing that's changed is how easy it is for Apple to get the 30%, because they were getting the 30% cut up front, right? Yeah. Yeah. And now they're still entitled to the 30%. They just have to get it from them after the fact. But again, if you don't want to pay that 30% to Apple, you shouldn't have agreed to do business with them, is what it's there. Now, Mr. Nice Guy, I think it's important for us to remind everybody what you said about me and Apple. Am I a fan of Apple, Mr. Nice Guy?
Not at all.
So let's just keep that in mind. But I think I like Epic even less. This was a court of fact-finding, you know, if you will. And I would like to share some of the interesting facts that I came away with. And the reason being, Mr. Nice Guy, is that Epic absolutely spent a lot of time trying to convince you and me and everybody else who plays video games that they were the heroes, that Apple was the villain, and that they were in the right on everything, and that Apple was in the wrong, when in fact, that was not cut and dried like that. And I think it's important for us to put out there and kind of hold their feet to the fire just a little bit about the ways that Epic deliberately tried to mislead you and me and everybody else that came out in discovery. I've got 5 things, and then we'll leave legalese for the evening. On page 13 of the ruling, and you can go check this out, Epic lied about the monetization methods surrounding Fortnite. They lied to the people as part of their public. In legal speak, they call it pretextual. But that's, you know, just legalese for you're lying.
So okay, but real quick, I gotta ask. Like, so did they lie or did they say something incorrectly? Because to me, there is a big difference. I just want to be clear with the people that listen.
So where's your line for lie versus deliberately mislead?
I don't know. I guess it's all relative, because there's people who are delirious that really believe that what they're saying is true. Like if they were presenting something for the sake of argument to defend themselves, but they were wrong in their defense, to me, that is not a lie. Do you know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying.
Like, you got to fight for yourself. I'll concede that they probably lied. I just want to make sure that that's really what happened, because I really don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so part of the whole discovery process is that they were able to gain access to internal documentation where what they said internally was the opposite of what they were saying externally.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that's a lie.
So yeah, we've got pretty good evidence that these are lies. Where was I? Page 13. Namely, that was all about like where the money in Fortnite was coming from. Page 14, Epic lied pretty early on about how Apple was taking a 30% cut, but that nobody else is taking a 30% cut. Not only did it turn out that basically everybody was taking a 30%, but it turned out that in some of the places, like in surprisingly in Sony, they pay Sony more than the 30% cut. But they weren't trying to go after Sony. They just went after Apple. Page 15, Epic lied about how much money that was coming from the iOS transactions. Page 19, Epic lied about their motivation for the changes, basically breaking the contract. And page 23, Epic lied about its hotfix. They knew going in what they were doing, but more than that, they had internal documentation showing engineers going back and forth specifically about how can we hide this from Apple so they don't know that we are actively trying to hack their code. So, you know, it didn't look great. And, you know, it certainly is clear to an extent that Epic was being, as they would say in the legal profession, a bad actor when it comes to all of this. So, at the end of the day, I think what's important to note is that Apple's not your friend, Epic's not your friend, and whenever some of these people try to, like, pretend like they're the ones who are, you know, championing us, that they really aren't. Specifically that one on page 19, they talk at great extent how all Epic was doing was trying to line their own pockets with more cash. They didn't care about any of the things that they were pretending to with consumer choice and things like that. It was all about money for themselves, and they have the inside scoop on that.
Well, cool. Dude, thank you for sharing that legalese with us. Ralph, have a good day at work. On that note, that has been our show, episode 199, which means, Mac, next episode is number 200, which is pretty exciting in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms. We're console agnostic here. So if you're here live, you have a job to do, let us know in the chat what you've been into so that we can find more stuff to listen to and watch. Mac, what have you been into this past couple weeks?
Dude, I've been into unpacking boxes and the like. And
yep.
I haven't had much time, but the missus and I, we've been watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Sex Education on Netflix. Been watching that new season. And I did find enough time to play another Metroid 2 remake, which is a fantastic game. Ooh. I know we've talked about it in video game history, but it's terrific. And if you don't already have a copy, Nintendo made sure you couldn't get a copy, but I might know a guy. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Love it. Love it. Well, as far as what I've been watching and playing, dude, it's been a great few weeks. I've been playing a lot of Deathloop. I'm really, really enjoying that game. Everyone's talking about it like it's a 10 out of 10. I have some thoughts on it that I won't get into tonight. I think it's fantastic. I don't know if it will be my game of the year. I've also been watching Why the Last Man, which is phenomenal. Now, Mac, I don't know if you remember this. In college, I took a comic book class, an English comic book class. And one of the books we had to read was Why the Last Man. Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctly, like, when I finished the class, I gave you the book. I didn't want it. I don't know if you ever got to read it. No pressure if you didn't. But now there's a TV show about it. And the show, in my opinion, is fantastic. So I've really been enjoying that on Hulu. And what else? I did go see Shang-Chi in theaters. I've been playing a little bit of Tony Hawk with the kids. That game is just timeless. The remake is great. And for the sake of time, that's it for me. Mac, what are people into in the chat?
I just have to say that I do remember reading it because you gave it to me, and I enjoyed it. So I'll keep my eyes on the show, though. But let's see. I'll take watching. Uncle Ruckus is watching Rick and Morty, South Park, and football. Spenis the Menace has been watching Shang-Chi, Marvel's What If, Recess, Monsters at Work, and NFL football. And Galvatron's been watching Malignant on HBO, and The Hobbit episode from South Park, and Impeachment American Crime Story.
Nice. And as far as what people have been playing, I'm so excited to have this Game of the Year conversation at the end of this year. It's been a great year for games. We got Alex Mann playing Mario Golf, Super Rush, Warframe, Wreckfest, Tower Unite, Breath of the Wild, and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. We got Spenis playing MLB The Show, NBA 2K22. WarioWare, Get It Together, Ratchet and Clank, Rift Apart, and he's needing to start Deathloop this week. My man Uncle Ruckus has been playing Deathloop, MLB The Show, Payday 2, Grand Theft Auto, Battlefield 4, and Company of Heroes 2. And Galvatron has been playing Black Ops Cold War, Skyrim, Hades, Hitman. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you so much for tuning into episode 199 of Two Nerds in a Pod. You really are the best viewers on Twitch. We'll see you next week. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhyme. Keep it nerdy, y'all.
See ya.